House Committee on Business and Labor, and I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2418.
Mr. Committee members, we carried over House Bill 2418 from Wednesday's hearing. This is a bill from the State Bar that adds certain legal entities and persons affiliated with these entities to the list of parties exempt from the real estate licensing law. We are ready to move out the bill, but we're waiting for the fiscal on the Dash 4 amendment, and it's minimal, so we are ready to go on moving the bill out. Yes.
In that case, Representative, I just opened a work session on House Bill 2418. Yep. Spent a lot of time on this. Mm-hmm. I'd entertain a motion to...
The Dash 4 amendment.
Dash 4 amendment. Do I have a motion?
Mr. Chair, I'll move the Dash 4s into 2418.
Representative Cameron moves Dash 4 amendment in House Bill 2418. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chair?
Representative.
What bill are we on? I mean, I know 2418. I'm looking for... We've got quite a pile of paper up here. And
yes,
I'm
we do.
Trying to catch up and... You move quickly.
Yes, Representative Edwards, actually, the only piece of paper on the dais relating to that bill is the analysis on the Dash 4. This bill we heard first on the 18th of February. It's clarification of certain legal entities that would be exempt from real estate licensing law.
Oh, got it. So okay, thank you.
Yeah, we were just waiting for the fiscal.
Quite all right. I want everybody to be cleared away here. Any further discussion on this bill?
Discretion.
Hopefully we're being discreet. I'm a picture of discretion. Is Representative Witt is excused. Okay, any objection to the motion on the amendment?
Yes, sir.
No opposition on the motion to move the Dash 4s into that bill?
Find them.
All right, seeing none, so moved.
Mr. Chair, I'll move House Bill 2418 as amended to the House floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Representative Cameron moves House Bill 2418. Oh, Representative Witt's here. Briefly. Representative Witt, we've already moved the Dash 4 amendment into House Bill 2418, and we are currently entertaining a motion on 2418 to the floor. As amended with a due pass recommendation, I would request that everyone shuts their phones off or gadgets. Any discussion on the bill? Is there any opposition to the motion? All right, well then, so moved. Would anyone like to volunteer to carry this bill on the floor?
I don't care.
Representative Esquel?
Being a realtor.
Thank you very much. Oh, wait. Yeah, I sent you our realtor.
Yeah, that's true.
There may be a conflict, Representative.
Oh.
And I've got you in that trouble before, and I'm not going to do it again in this session.
So that's okay. I understand that you like to do that.
It's
okay.
Purely inadvertent. Maybe Representative Barton, I'll do that to you.
Mr. Chair, would this be a candidate for consent calendar?
I don't. If that's the will of the committee, or someone can volunteer to carry the bill. It's pretty. We probably ought to have it explained on the floor. Anyone want to volunteer to carry this bill?
I'll carry the bill. I
thank you, Representative Edwards. That will buy you indulgences in the future. All right. We're going to close the hearing work session on House Bill 2418. And I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2753.
Mr. Chair, committee members, we first heard House Bill 2753 on March the 13th. The measure authorizes changes in fees the pawnbroker may collect for certain items. During the hearing, we went over a conceptual amendment in which the form and LC in general is in front of you. Actually, there are two amendments in front of you. The proponents wish to move forward on the Dash 5 amendment, and we have Paul Romaine from the Oregon Pawnbrokers Association to walk you through.
And I understand we do not have
summaries. That's right.
So we cannot move it. But Mr. Romaine, would you like to come up and just walk through what we're doing here, please?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Paul Romaine. I'm representing the Oregon Pawnbrokers Association, House Bill 2753. We went over 2 weeks ago. The amendments that are before you, the Dash 5, do a few things. One is they take the notice that we would be giving for somebody whose loan is ready for forfeiture, and we changed the notice requirements. In the bill, we had put in regular mail up to $2,500. What we decided after consultation with folks is that, first of all, the idea of registered mail, while sounding good at the hearing, when we did research on it, we realized that it was actually double the cost of certified mail. So we quickly abandoned that issue. And what we've done is we've dropped the regular mail will be between $500 and $1,500. Anything above $1,500, it'll be both regular and certified mail. The reason, actually, in these situations, regular mail is more effective notice than certified mail because people tend to actually pick up and look at their regular mail and not their certified mail. The other area that we discussed, the first part in Section 4 was, we discussed it last time. If you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer it. It was just trying to get the right language out of Legislative Council, which seemed to be a difficult problem. The Section 7 with the cities and counties, we have agreement with the City of Portland. The City of Eugene is still waiting for somebody to come back, but they seem to be at least okay with moving this forward, where we'd cap their, make it so they couldn't do more than a $1 fee. Hopefully the cities and counties, or if they do adopt any kind of fee like this, will, with consumer protection in mind, stagger the fees so that you don't have a $1 fee on a $20 pawn. It's different to have a $1 fee on a $1,000 pawn versus a $1 fee on a $20 pawn. And the cities and counties will have it in their authority to basically adopt something that would be reasonable. So everybody seems to be happy with the bill. We would urge you to move it forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions of Mr. Romaine while we have him up here? All right. Well, thanks, Paul. We're waiting patiently, and when we get all that information,
thank you.
No.
Okay, well, that's all we have for that. And then when we get the measure, LFO and revenue summaries, we'll move the bill. So I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2753 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2405.
Chair, committee members, House Bill 2405's first hearing was on March the 4th. The measure prohibits regulation of sit rates, terms and conditions of service, or entry into the market of voice over internet protocol for internet protocol-enabled services. You have in front of you a number of amendments. The Dash 9 amendments are from Verizon, and they will be reviewing that amendment when they come up to testify. There's also a Dash 2 amendment and a Dash 11 amendment from Representative Holvey. And I believe there's individuals that are going to speak to each of those. Is that correct?
Yeah. Just looking at the Dash 11.
Just at the 11. Okay.
All right, we're going to have the nice people from Verizon come up here and walk us through this. David Valdez, Greg Romano, and Gene Eng. Yes.
Whoever wants to go first,
please go right ahead.
Good morning, Chair. Members of this esteemed committee, my name is David Valdez. I serve as Senior Vice President for Verizon Northwest, and I am here this morning to provide comments on the Dash 9 amendments to Bill 2405. Since the last hearing that we had, I'd like to report that we have reached greater consensus with additional parties. As of today, I'm happy to report that we have arrived at consensus with the competitive local exchange carriers. We have arrived at consensus with the Oregon Telecommunications Association, and we have also arrived consensus with the Department of Administrative Services. In addition to that, we continue to have the support of Tech America, the IBEW, the Oregon State Association of Electrical Workers, AT&T, the Vaughn Coalition, and that includes Intel and Microsoft. The Dash amendments send a real strong signal to the industry that promotes continued investment in technology infrastructure. It promotes job creation at a time when we're dealing with very difficult economic, we're dealing with a very difficult economic environment. And it also promotes innovation in an industry that is very much at its infancy. We had an opportunity to briefly take a look at the Dash 11 amendments, and I could tell you that that is case in point as to why we need the Dash 9 amendments. That is the reason why we have been very concerned all along. That is the reason that we have sought to pursue House Bill 2405 to maintain the status quo. And in closing, I'd like to urge this committee to move House Bill 2405 with the Dash 9 amendments and send a strong signal that Oregon is ripe for innovation, Oregon is ripe for job creation and for continued investment. And now I'd like to turn it over to my colleagues.
Chair, can I ask a brief question?
Why don't we hear from the panel representative and keep your question in mind, and then we'll start with you.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Greg Romano. I'm General Counsel of Rising Northwest, and I'm here to walk through the Dash 9 amendments. These amendments incorporate the Dash 1 as well as the Dash 8, and they have been compiled based on conversations we've had with other stakeholders and in response to some of the concerns that were raised at the last committee hearing that was held on HB 2405. So with that, I'd like to just walk through what the Dash 9 amendments do, and specifically the new Section 3 that is part of the Dash 9 makes clear that a number of things are not affected by the bill. We don't think this Section 3 is necessary, but we've heard the concerns of other parties. We listened at the last hearing. We've been engaged in numerous discussions, and we just want to make clear to put people at ease that the bill does not address these various issues. So just walking through them one by one. In Section 3A, there is language that makes clear that any authority related to a list of subjects is not affected by the bill. And when you look at 3A, the 3AA preserves any authority related to E911 service as well as fees for E911 service. Section B preserves any authority related to telecommunications relay service fees. Section C preserves any authority related to universal service funding. And Section D has been changed slightly after a conversation with the Oregon Telecommunications Association. It now refers to switch network access rates, terms and conditions, or other intercarrier compensation. And with that amendment, the OTA does not object to the bill. We now have a Section E, which we worked out with the competitive local exchange carriers, and we specify that no state authority with regard to the interconnection rights or duties of telecommunications utilities or competitive carriers is affected by the bill. And with that, the competitive local exchange carriers that testified at the last hearing no longer object to the bill. In Section 3B, we made clear that the consumer protection laws that apply to commercial services in the state will apply to VoIP and IP services. There's no intent to exempt such services from the robust consumer protection laws that already exist in the state. That includes the Unfair Trade Practices Act, which prohibits various unconscionable tactics and misrepresentations, as well as requires goods and services to be provided as they were promised by the seller. And that act can be enforced both through private rights of action, through lawsuits, as well as enforced by the Attorney General. And in certain cases, the recovery of attorney's fees or punitive damages are allowed. So the robust consumer protection statutes that apply to all other commercial services would apply to VoIP and IP services. But we also, in Section 3C, make clear that nothing in the bill impacts any authority related to the collection of taxes with regard to VoIP services. In Section 3D, we've changed Sections 3D and E slightly to address some of the comments that were raised by the cities at the last committee hearing. Specifically, Section 3D specifies that no authority of a locality to regulate a cable franchise is impacted by the bill. In the last version of the bill, we referred to a specific section 621 of the Communications Act, which governed franchise agreements, but we understood from the cities that this wasn't broad enough because it may not include the franchise fee section, which is covered by Section 622 of the Communications Act. So what we did instead was just to refer to the entire Title VI of the Communications Act, which means that all authority that a city has over cable services is preserved by the bill. That includes franchises, franchise fees, public interest channels, all of those things. And then in
use of the right-of-way.
And then in 3F, the use of the right-of-way, we have a specific clarification that nothing in the bill affects the ability of a city to regulate the rights-of-way, and we specify that that includes the collection of fees for the use of such right-of-way, which we understood was a concern at the last hearing. In Section F, we again make clear that nothing in the bill affects the authority of the Department of Administrative Services. And with that amendment, the department does not object to the bill. We've added a Section 3G to address pole attachments. We understood that there was some concern that the Public Utility Commission may be affected in terms of their regulation of pole attachments. That obviously was not the intent of the bill. So we specified that nothing in here modifies any authority with regard to pole attachments as set forth in the statutory sections of the Oregon revised statutes. And then lastly, we have the Section 3H, which, because we have a laundry list of things that are not affected by the bill, we just have a Section H to make clear that, of course, nothing in the bill gives the authority to a state or locality to do something that's been preempted by federal law, including related to services that are defined by as information services under the Communications Act. So that's what the Dash 9 amendments do. And I'd just like to emphasize that with the Sections 3, D, and E, we've taken great pains to ensure that the city's revenue streams with regard to cable franchising and rights of way are clearly not impacted by the bill. We didn't think they were impacted, but we've added the language just to make sure. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Representative Barton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A question for Mr. Valdez. The question, you were talking about all the consensus that you have reached, and I really appreciate the proponents of this bill, the approach you've taken in trying to forge consensus. I'm wondering if you have been able to reach a consensus with Integra. I remember in the last testimony that, I mean, you have essentially a grand old Oregon company saying it could potentially put them out of business. I talked to you afterwards, and you suggested that the concerns were either misplaced or easily accommodated. I'm wondering if there's been progress or consensus reached on that front.
Yes, Mr. Chair, and Representative Barton, the answer to your question is yes.
Thank you.
We have reached consensus and to respond with the language that we've presented in the Dash 9 minutes.
Thank you.
Representative Cameron, please.
Thank you. Mr. Valdez, you had a nice lengthy group of people who are in support of the bills. Did not include cities and counties.
Correct.
And I guess probably my question is more to Mr. Romano. I guess I'd like a little more explanation about D and E over there, because that's the section that's related to franchise fees and counties. And you know, part of my question is if what is currently cable is provided over the voice and internet protocol, is that subject to fees and consumer protection? Which seems, as I understand it, to be the issue the counties have.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Kennemer, the purpose of 3D is specifically to say that any authority that cities have over cable services, cable operators, cable systems is preserved by the bill. And so anything that's classified as a cable service is still subject to Title VI of the Communications Act, and here it's clear that that's not disturbed. And what that means is the sections in that Title VI, which include the franchising as well as the franchise fees, are still retained and unaffected by the bill.
I think, Mr. Chairman, another question. I think I understand that. I guess the issue is if you are providing the identical service or a equivalent service.
Mr. Chair and Representative Kennemer, if just trying to explore your question, if your question is about, for instance, IPTV or Internet Protocol TV, there's been a great deal of litigation as to what kind of service IPTV is. Verizon doesn't offer that type of service, but my understanding is the only federal case that's ever considered that determined that it was a cable service subject to Title VI. And so something like that, if you know, if that's the law, then the that Title VI is preserved by this bill. But the point is, none of that litigation is affected by this particular bill. All we do here is just preserve whatever the law is with respect to cable services.
Mr. Chairman,
please go right ahead, sir.
In the event that cable TV becomes obsolete, I guess there's nothing that prevents counties and cities from coming back and looking at whether, if this is the new way it's provided, that they might want to look for, by the way, in franchise fees out of this.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kennemer, that's correct. And in rights of way, we have a specific section on that, which just specifies that any authority with respect to rights of way, including imposition of fees, is not affected by the bill. So if there's an ability to impose fees on VoIP or IP-enabled services for rights of way, then this doesn't disturb it one way or the other.
Any further questions? Representative Holby.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm kind of curious, you did speak a little bit about consumer protections and the ability to have consumer protections enforced under the UTPA. Seems you're relying on the UTPA for your consumer protections in this bill. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Holby, we're basically relying on all generally applicable consumer protection standards that apply to all commercial services in the state. And I did highlight the particular Unfair Trade Practices Act, as it seems to be a fairly important consumer protection statute that would apply to this and as well as all other services.
Follow up,
please.
So what other consumer protection laws are you speaking of besides the UTPA?
Mr. Chair, Representative Holby, there are other, of course, antitrust statutes. Whatever statutes apply generally to all services in the state would apply to VoIP and IP services.
Follow-up, Mr. Chair, again. So if a customer has a billing issue or a service issue and a specific issue to that particular consumer, my understanding of the UTPA is the consumer has no redress through the UTPA for that individual case. And so I'm wondering where the consumer would get redress with a disagreement with your service or your billing.
Mr. Chair, Representative Holby, a customer can, under the Unfair Trade Practices Act, sue a company for engaging in deceptive trade practices, and the Attorney General and a prosecuting attorney can also do that. And there are specific remedies that are available, including, in some cases, attorney's fees, punitive damages.
I would like to interject a question right here, right now, on that point. This bill, right now, there's consumer protections of various kinds relating to voice over internet protocol. Right now, this bill will not change anything that a consumer has access to now after it's passed, if it could be passed. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, yes, that is correct.
Okay. So currently, the rights to sue and recover damages right now will not be changed one single bit by the passage of this bill. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, yes, that is absolutely.
And I have not heard an outcry from this state demanding a regulation of this technology. Have you?
No, Mr. Chair.
And I've got to point one more thing out, and then I'll go back to Representative Holby. You guys, my good commissioner, shared this with me about total calls and cases relating to various kinds of technology and voice over internet protocol has actually been, it went up because it was new. Now it's clearly trending down. I would say that represents
you know, Mike Schaffler figuring out what the hell he's doing with his gear, and as my learning curve ascends greatly and sharply as always, clearly my complaints and concerns are going down. Am I reading this correctly? That's a yes or no question. Make it easy on me.
Yes.
Thank you. Representative Holby, if you'd like to follow up, please do.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I certainly will. So my concern is essentially majorly a consumer protection issue, and that you are prohibiting in this bill any government from that kind of regulation. Now, going through the UTPA or a private right of action, somebody who is not really wealthy and doesn't have a lot of money is not going to have the money to hire an attorney to sue you in the first place. And second, the Attorney General is not going to take up an individual's case to get a remedy for a consumer through the UTPA. They'll look at a pattern of practice potentially, and if they see a whole class of problems that are the same, then they may take one up, and in that case they would have a private right of action under the UTPA. But otherwise an individual has very, very little opportunity to redress, I guess, in an individual case. And that's my concern with this bill, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Okay. Would you respond?
Mr. Chair, Representative Holby, thank you for your question. I think what I'd like to highlight is that what we're talking about here is an industry that is very much at its infancy. It is very much at its early stages of development. And as a provider of this kind of service, we have to have a compelling reason why a customer is going to leave the service that they know, such as POTS service or their cell phone service, and go to a VoIP service. So we are very focused that this is the most competitive space. It is the most innovative space, and it is the most promising space in terms of how we communicate. So the idea that we will try to put a box around it when we don't really know how it's going to develop is like trying to put the internet in a bottle and say, let's stop it where it is because of the numerous types of concerns that have been raised by numerous people. What we would urge you is to vote out the House bill with -9 amendments, because we are protecting the status quo, allowing innovation, and that would close it out with that.
Any further questions of these gentlemen?
Mr.
Holy, please.
Well, thank you, and I appreciate that, and certainly, you know, we don't want to stifle business nor competition, but I got to say a complete lack of government regulation has not proved to be the best method for moving our economy forward. I mean, it just to me baffles me that you know, we would be considering a deregulating an industry when the federal government is still looking at how they should regulate this and maybe moving forward with something, and so we're going to pass a bill that would preempt us from doing just that in the future and not really knowing exactly what the parameters are going to be in the future. Competition will you know, correct itself, you know, that's been said, and certainly competition will urge you to have good customer service, quite frankly, history doesn't show that deregulation and competition protects the consumers nor our economy. Thank you.
Language is important. It's important what we say here. This bill is deregulating absolutely nothing. We are not removing any regulations at all. Zero. So it is false and incorrect to state that we are deregulating anything with this bill. I want everyone hearing and listening to this right now. We are not deregulating anything. And not only that, we are not preempting nor precluding the state government from in the future to regulate this or anything else. And I have not had an outcry demanding regulation on this technology. And based on the Public Utility Commission's chair's graph, it shows this technology and the calls and cases concerning it and consumer protection, protecting our consumers, the complaints are going down. But we are not deregulating anything, nor are we tying the hands of any legislature in the future. That would take a constitutional change, if I'm not wrong. And even that could be changed. So I just want to clarify that, make that very clear, because words are important. Representative Matthews.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess for me, we talked after the last hearing. It was, you know, you're given a lot of direction from the committee, a lot of the folks out there in the testimony. I think you've done a good job of going back and kind of coming up with some amendments to address that concern. The one thing that I remember distinctly saying was, I didn't need the League of Cities to be 100% in, but I needed them to be involved. And I'm just kind of curious, I guess two questions. First of all, what has been your involvement with the League of Cities in terms of addressing their concerns? And then the other side of that is, your list of folks that are on board with the project now, maybe, you know, we had quite a long list coming into this of people in support. Maybe give me an idea of who came on board since and expressing initial concern. Who have you changed their position on to bring them on in terms of your support that you mentioned earlier?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Matthews, let me address first your point about involvement with the cities. I have met with several cities, and we've reached out to them, you know, to establish a dialogue on how we could, get them comfortable with the concerns that we had heard in the, at the first hearing. And, you know, as Mr. Romano indicated earlier, you know, the one thing that we did do was expand the definition that covers cable franchising to include Title VI. And so, you know, that outreach has been made. We've shared our amendments. I mean, we've been very, very forthcoming with our amendments. We've shared them. As you may recall, at that first hearing, we shared the draft that went down to Legislative Council, you know, to make sure that everybody knew exactly what we were doing. And so, that's to address your first question. And as far as your question associated with, who's come on board on this bill, as Mr. Valdez has indicated, I mean, we've reached consensus with the competitive local exchange carriers. We've reached consensus with the Oregon Telecommunications Association and with the Department of Administrative Services. And so, you know, again, I just want to emphasize the point that we have, made outreach to various parties. We've shared our amendments. We've been open to dialoguing. We've asked people, you know, tell us what your concerns are. And at the end of the day, you know, we feel that we have made the concessions. You know, we've brought people on board. And any differences that remain, I think are rooted in just philosophical differences. So,
thank you. Any further questions of these gentlemen before we cut them loose today? Once again, we're waiting for revenue and fiscal summaries. We'll just wait patiently for that. And if we don't get it, we'll do it Monday or Wednesday. All right, well, let you guys go. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you.
Grant Wolf, you want to come up, talk about this, and then I'll go down the list of nice people.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Brant Wolf, representing the Oregon Telecommunications Association. As Mr. Valdez indicated, we worked closely with Verizon to reach a neutral position on the bill with the Dash 9 amendments. Just to clarify for you, Representative Matthews, I'm not sure what you mean by on board, but if you mean support, then we are not supporting or opposing the measure. We're certainly neutral on the measure. And I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions of Mr. Wolf today? Thank you, sir.
You bet.
Fred Chris, Lee Byer, and Jeff Blessinet. Come on up, gentlemen. Thank you. All right. I wish people would get. Whoever wants to go first, guys.
Go ahead.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Fred Christ. I work with the Metropolitan Area Communications Commission in Beaverton, Oregon. We regulate cable television for cities large and small, ranging from River Grove to Washington County. I was here 3 weeks ago. I have the same concerns today that I had 3 weeks ago, unfortunately, and that is with Section D, the cable television exception in the Dash 9 amendments. Those amendments are fine as far as things go. The issue arises when IPTV, Internet Television, Internet Protocol Television, goes into full effect, as it will at some point in the future. At that point, that definition will supersede the savings clause in Section 3D, and at that point, two scenarios come up. Either Comcast or Verizon in our area come to me and say, we now have IPTV. This is no longer cable television. We have to renegotiate. We have to curtail our franchise fees. We have to change the way we do public access television. We have to eliminate or curtail the public communications network, which connects 230 police stations, fire stations, schools in our area. Or we are sued. And so those are the two scenarios. The third scenario, I guess, would be that we have to come back to the legislature, get yet another definition from the legislature on what is Internet Protocol Television, and go from there. The problem is that this is very complicated stuff, and Section 1A is a hugely large blanket preemption on Internet Protocol-enabled services. And beyond that, that is the philosophical and fundamental difference we have with the Dash 9 amendments and Verizon. If this was just a VOIP bill, I wouldn't be here. I wouldn't have been here 3 weeks ago. But we're very concerned that it is far more than that, and I would hope that you take that into consideration and be happy to answer any questions.
Mr. Chairman?
Whoever wants to go first, we're going to go through the panel, and then we're going to open it to questions. We're going to start with Representative Kenner at that time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. For the record, I'm Lee Beyer. I'm the chairman of the Oregon Public Utility Commission. I hear the whistle blowing on this one. I think the train's on the track, but I still want to say on behalf of Oregon consumers, which is my responsibility, we still oppose this bill, although we have, listening very closely to Verizon last time and the commitments they made to you, we have taken that, worked with our attorneys, and we believe put together the Dash 11 amendments, which answer all of the things they said in a straightforward manner. Our attorneys and I have distributed to you a letter from the Attorney General, his review of their Dash 9 amendments and the concerns that they still have there. But I want to start out and just say that we still believe that this is not good public policy for the state of Oregon. And a couple of concerns. And I want to be real clear, and I think the former speaker addressed some of this. This is not just a VOIP bill. This has three components that you should be thinking about. One is voice over the Internet protocol, which for various reasons has definitional problems, not only here, but at the state level. It's not clear what that is. Secondly, it refers to any other IP-enabled technology, which we talked about there. It has a broad span of definition. And third, it allows for any future technology that may come along the line that we don't even know about. So you're covering a pretty broad blanket with this act of exempting it completely. And to clarify VOIP, there's a lot of mystery about that, people. From the consumer's perspective, it's just as Mr. Ng said, it's POTS. It's plain old telephone service. That's what we call POTS, plain old telephone service. From the customer, it's just a telephone call. Pick up the phone, get a dial tone, dial in, and it rings on the other end. That's what we're talking about here on the VOIP side. We do not currently deal with that at all, and I'm not asking for more information. There's confusion about how all of that works together. What you need to think about and know is that that system doesn't work. You know, a Verizon system does not work in isolation. It only works to the extent that their system talks to all the other telephone companies out there. In Oregon, we have over 50 basic ILEC telephone companies. I may be overstating that, but I'm trying to remember. 40-some, that, and we have over 200 people that are out there that provide various telephone services. All of that stuff needs to talk to each other. Some of it's analog. The old copper system is analog, but it's, for the most part, it's only analog from your house to the nearest central office. From there, everything in essence is digital or the same thing as IP technology. Everybody runs on digital technology today. The reason is that's what makes the most business sense. So you're mixing it all together here a little bit, and it gets confusing. And maybe where you're going is the future is to deregulate everything and say there's enough out there that we don't need to do it anymore. I mean, we spent a lot of time last session worrying or arguing about wireless and the protections there, and that's the same thing. It's only wireless from your phone to the nearest tower, and then it runs over the same wires. It all uses exactly the same wires. So, I mean, that's what we're talking about here. A little bit on...
Mr. Beyer, that bill's not in this committee this year.
Thank God.
Amen. We agree on a lot of things, Mr. Commissioner, that's one of them.
The other one that's there is a little bit on the job creation. I think there's a lot of mystery. It's a really good argument to make economic discussions this time. The fact of the matter is, and to their credit, Verizon has already deployed their fiber system. It's called Fios. It's there. They're not going to do anymore. Why? Because it doesn't make any sense. They put it where they can get a recovery on their investment, just like each of you would do as a business person. Are they going to take it out to LeGrand? I really doubt it. Why? Because you can't recover the money there. I mean, we have the arguments with them over their copper plant there and the lack of investment at different times, but we deal with that. The third thing is one of the things that you need to understand about that is they're absolutely accurate that today, as long as they continue to run parallel plants, which they have the old copper system that's been in the ground forever, and they have the new fiber system run along, and they're selling fiber as an option to people. At some point, economically, they need to switch to the fiber system. I hope they do. That's a better system. If they do, it will no longer be regulated in any way. There will no longer be any customer of last resort provisions. How they deal with customers will be totally on their own. So at that point, the customer will decide, because there won't be another wireline out there. The CLEX will no longer have access. CLEX are the competitive telephone providers who depend on the copper loop. That's what they have access to do that. Under federal law, they have no right of access to the fiber system under existing. So their option will be to go to cable TV, the cable companies for phone service, or go wireless. That's the only option they'll have out there. And maybe that's enough. Your call on that. Maybe that's enough. So that's out there. The other ones you talked about, we heard the lady from Skype last time. It's a nice service. I think Representative Esquivel talked about that. That's a service that started in Estonia, was bought by Google, and I think their plant's still in Estonia, but it doesn't make any difference where it is. I mean, we may be creating more jobs in Estonia, and that's probably a good thing. But the reality is you have to have another system. That's what the federal government, the FCC, calls a mobile VoIP, and that's the one that they clearly said that's up for anybody else anywhere, and we just argue about that differently. Last piece that I would like just to talk about is the consumer protection, and frankly, Mr. Chair, I respectfully disagree with your interpretation of that. I shared with you the bar chart purely because last time people were saying, does anybody complain? Understand that bar chart represents calls to our office that we do not regulate. We try to help people. I think that's what you want us to do. We have no authority to do anything. Fortunately, we have good relationships with people, and we most of the time can talk them into fixing things. But I would take a different perspective than you. You did the VoIP section there, which what that represents is the Skypes and some of those others like that. You will note that the Fios system, which there's a small number of Verizon customers who now have that, small percentage, you'll notice that's increasing, not decreasing. People do have concerns. I guess the question is, do you think that they have a right to have anybody help them with those concerns? We're not talking economic regulation in any way. We're talking about the ability to help a customer resolve the problem. That's the only thing that I'm interested in here. The last piece, then, let me talk about the consumer protection piece. And you're right that there is no...
Commissioner, would you define Fios for everybody?
I'm sorry.
Me included.
Fiber.
Help me out, Jamie. Forgetting what the acronym stands for.
Fios is really just a
It's a trademark.
It's a trademark trade name for the services that we provide.
provide over a fiber optic depth.
IP is Internet Protocol, and fiber optics, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, must be fine.
We'll get it squared away here pretty soon. Go ahead.
Anyway, it's their trade name, and all it is their fiber-based system rather than a copper-based system. So it's lasers laser signals as opposed to electrical impulse signals. It's essentially the difference between them. Consumer protection. They're generally available, real clear. Representative Hovey was correct. There's a whole body of law that's there, but two points you need to understand. For an individual customer, the right of action is to file suit in court. That's how an individual consumer can avail themselves of the laws on this side. And it makes sense, except are you going to file suit over a $30 building or a billing dispute? That's the issue. There's nothing in that that allows you to take a legal action with respect to service quality or anything like that. Frankly, your right of action under that, if you're a consumer, under this bill would be to vote with your feet. Try to go to a cell or something else. I mean, that would be it. There is no, and I would ask you to think of what I refer to as the Aunt Millie's. What is your grandmother going to do who has the phone service? That's the issue, is what right are you concerned with that? And frankly, now it isn't so much in Verizon's territory, but if you've got in other areas, if you're living out in a rural area, you may not have a cell phone alternative. You probably wouldn't have a cable TV alternative. All you have is a wire going to your house, and probably only one because it doesn't make sense for multiple providers to be there today. So that's an issue. What the Attorney General can do, and they will tell you this, is they can, if they see a pattern of bad practices, and a pattern means multiple, a number of them, they can take action, and the action that they take is to sign, generally, is to sign a consent decree about that voluntary. It's a voluntary action. Say, we won't admit that we did anything wrong, but we promise not to do anything wrong in the future, and we'll give you a little money. And that's how you fund the Attorney General's Consumer Protection Office, with people making voluntary payments to them, saying they won't do something wrong in the future that they won't admit that they did in the past. That's it. They cannot take an action on behalf of an individual Oregonian by law. By Oregon law, they are precluded from acting on behalf of an individual. So that's the concern we have. But having said all of that and obviously expressed my frustration with it a little bit, I would offer to you the Dash 11 amendments, which I believe we tried to work in good faith, which put in connection there, put in language that we think is very clear what Verizon said they agreed to. We have not worked with Verizon because they have not come to us and asked to work with us on anything. So this is where we're at on that, what we've said there. We may have some disagreements on the consumer protection side, but that comes from what I just talked about, is our difference in view on consumer protections and theirs. So, Mr. Chair, with that, we would be happy to answer questions. This was prepared by the Attorney General's office for us. And
sure. Do you have anything to say, sir?
Brian's here. Brian Conway is the PUC telecommunications administrator, and he's here to try to answer technical questions that I screw up.
I know this is a frustrating subject, Lee, and I share your frustration. Don't ever get me wrong. And I think you're doing a fine job as the chair of the commission. And your wife's an excellent legislator.
Now you've got to roll the faces, don't you?
And congratulations on being a grandparent.
Absolutely. God bless you. Can't wait to see that baby. But all the talk of right of action and consumers' ability to be made whole, there is no regulation currently, forgive me, other than the existing consumer protections we currently have on the books. This bill will not change that. Their ability to sue now, this bill will not change any of that. Is that correct? Can you answer that question for me?
Mr. Chair, with regards to that, you are correct.
Thank you.
It would not, but I would take it as a direction from this legislature that you do not want us to help customers as we have been.
But, Lee, I want to get it correct, though. You can't help them now.
All you do is refer them to the Department of Justice. Is that correct?
That is not correct, Mr. Chair.
What do you do for them now?
We take the calls. The philosophy that I have put in place at the PUC since I've been there is any Oregonian who calls us and wants help, we try to help them. Even if we don't have authority, we try to help them. We have entered into, on the cellular side, an agreement with the Attorney General side because they do not have the staff to enforce the cellular complaints under their voluntary compliance agreement. We have entered into an agreement to do that work for them.
And you would not be prevented from continuing that policy if this bill passed, would you?
I guess we wouldn't be prevented, but I certainly would see it as a directive from this legislature that you don't think that's important.
Well, that would be your interpretation, but that would not necessarily, that is not a policy, a written policy. That would be your interpretation of what this body would do if we passed this bill.
Mr. Chair.
Correct?
Correct, Mr. Chair. I would believe that if I were in the company's shoes, they would say very clearly, wait a minute, we just had that discussion with the legislature, and they pretty clearly told you it was none of your business.
Well, they can do and say whatever they want, Lee. But I can tell you one thing right now. The chair of this committee, me, who will vote for this bill in the dash nines if we get that far, is definitely, I want to make it very clear for the record, not giving you such direction. On the contrary, I would hope and I would urge you to continue doing exactly what you're doing now, even though you have no authority. Now, if you come to me and say, we haven't got any money to continue this, I could appreciate that.
Yeah.
That I could appreciate. And in the future, if for some reason these folks get some kind of monopolistic hold on everything, and these numbers under VOIP start to go like this, make sure I'm doing it right, then I would gladly come here and join you in slapping some regulation on people that don't work and act and carry out business in good faith and with the concern and care and the interest of the consumers at heart. I would join you in doing that. And I want to say one more thing, too, and then I'll go to whoever. We'll start with Representative Cameron. Now, they're talking about all this investment in Oregon, and clearly we all want investment in Oregon. I say we get them pass this bill and get them to invest all their hundreds of millions of dollars in this state. And if they screw up, then we slap a bunch of regulation on them after they got their investment here. Mm-hmm. That's what I would do.
Mr. Chair.
My humble opinion. And I'm looking at them right now. Mm-hmm. If they invest all that money in here and they screw up and they start messing with even a small number of consumers, if I'm 80 years old, I'll be back here saying, these guys did not act in good faith. They need to be slapped with a whole boat and train load full of regulation. I said the same thing 2 years ago about the other bill that I'm thankful isn't in this committee. But I'm not telling you how I'm going to vote on that right now because I may well vote for that bill too. So that's what I would do. Let's get them investing here. Let's get them here. Get them to spend all their money here. Get them to hire all these workers here. And if they screw up, then we come back here and spank them.
Well,
would you like
Chair,
to respond to any of that before I go to Representative Kennemer?
I think you make a point. Why don't you ask them if they're ready to make the same investment in La Grande or on the South Coast or in Silverton that they've made in the richer areas of the state?
I would urge them to do exactly the same thing.
Well, obviously, they must be willing to do that.
Well,
that's they've made their case. Ask them.
It took a long time for rural electrification to get through America. My dad, I've told the story in another committee. The wires went within like 2 miles from my grandpa's dairy farm. He drove his truck down there and said, I will pay for the poles and the wire and the insulators and all the labor if you'll just string a line out to my house right now. And they said, no, you're going to have to wait. So things take time in America, and I don't want more to tell you, but you're right. I hope they do get out there and help those good people in those good communities. Representative Kennemer, then Edwards, Esquivel, and Barton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Christ, I want to thank you for a phone call yesterday and a chance to talk with you. I guess, as I've been trying to understand and look at this issue, it seems to me that I asked Verizon for a commitment to protect and hold harmless the franchise right-of-ways and consumer protections that counties and cities currently have. And I think, indeed, the Dash 9 amendments do that. As I understand your concern, it's a little bit different, and that is, how can we regulate and potentially tax now what does not exist and may replace what we call cable now? And I think that's, in a way, a legitimate question, but I guess my view is that we don't really know how that's going to play out, and I don't know that we can regulate it or tax it in advance because we don't know the exact shape that's going to take. And in my view, that's the reason I think I'm ready to support this is, as I look at it, several of us are likely to be here in the next session or two. And, you know, when we have a better shape of this, I can think of lots of other things to potentially regulate and tax. You know, maybe emissions from satellites or, you know, all kinds of crazy things that are out there. And I just find it hard. I, you know, as one of the people who was very involved in Clackamas County and I think directly expanded our cable program, and we've been involved in customer service and really had some knockdown issues with some of our cable providers and have held our ground firmly because the law supports us. I understand this on a firsthand basis, but I do think we don't know where this really goes. And that paranoia is probably legitimate, but I don't think it's legitimate to figure out what we're going to do about it before we know what it is. And I just wondered if you had any additional response to that.
Sure. Mr. Chair, Representative Kennemer, I think the issue is this. At some time, 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, who knows? Mm-hmm. One of the cable companies that serves your area will change out some equipment in its head end where it gathers the signals. Probably won't change anything in the right-of-way, probably won't change anything in your house, maybe your converter box. And at that point, it becomes maybe cable instead of definitely cable. Mm-hmm. And at that point, Title VI maybe goes out the window. Depends on how the operator wants to define it and pursue legal action on it. That is the concern. The committee just needs to think about whether a simple change in technology should endanger franchise fees and all of the other issues that go along with local cable television franchising.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Mr. Chair, just an additional comment. I guess the problem is I think you're right. Maybe it does. But maybe it doesn't, and I don't know how to anticipate that maybe other than to say, just like everything else, we have about 3,000 bills introduced today in the legislature to deal with lots of the maybes that came true.
And on the franchise fee, that if the dirt isn't involved, I think they're going to have a local government's going to have a hard time saying demanding that those fees continue to be paid by if you add up by customer by customer. If they're using a pole, they're burying a cable, they're tearing up the road, and the cost of repairing and maintaining that after that, that I think is a very, very justifiable charge. You're sending a bunch of airwaves over my house. Can I somehow stop you by saying all the air above my house into infinity is mine and you may, shall, and cannot use it in any way, transmit anything through it, fly through it? You know, that's a hard question to answer, and I think the local government, which I know I'm very familiar with, is going to have a big challenge in front of them to continue to justify those charges, when in reality, the whole charges in the first place were for the renting, the use, and the maintenance of that property. We're not going to go down that road today. We're not going to have that debate here today, but I just want to get that out there. This is difficult to say one way or the other if they're going to continue, if these companies are going to be held and charged if they are transmitting through the air. That's a hard one. We're not debating that issue. Go ahead. Then I'm going
Mr.
to
Mr. Chair, if I could have a one sentence clarification on that. When we're talking about cable television, section 3D here. We're not talking about anything over the air. We're talking about the same wire that's in the dirt that you're talking about right now.
Then I will be with you on the demanding that they continue to pay those franchise fees. It's in or on the dirt. I'm with you. I'll always be with you on that. Representative Edwards.
Thank you, Chair Schaffler. First of all, I agree with the good chair's sentiment that the PUC should not change its current policy, and I think that the philosophy to try to help the consumer is the right one, as we've spoken in the past, and I think you said in our last hearing what the PUC has is the silver hammer. The threat of regulation brings around some cooperation from communications companies that aren't currently regulated, under the PUC. And I don't see that that goes away with this, because clearly we're having a big discussion about it here in this committee and probably on the floor. And there are a lot of us that are inclined to vote for this bill that are saying, if there's a big problem with consumer protection come a few years, then we need to go back in the other direction. So I wanted to get that on the record. Secondly, Chair Beyer, you said my concern, I mean, there, most of my concerns, all of my concerns have been addressed in the Dash 9s. And so my pivotal question in deciding how I was going to vote was that question about Aunt Millie. And does she have choices and alternatives? And you had, and in your testimony, that is what you indicated was one of your concerns, and you correctly said she may not have a cell service option. She may not have, if she lives in rural, in a rural area, she may not have more than one copper wire option, and she may not have a cable alternative. And so what I'm wondering is, I mean, does that actually exist in the existing Fios system? I mean, it is your assertion that Verizon in particular as a provider probably isn't going to build out their system further beyond what its current footprint. And so in that footprint, are there big significant areas where there isn't, say, a cable option?
I don't know that. I think there may be some, but I'm not sure. I'd have to look closer at it. We're essentially talking the north end of the valley. Most of the urbanized area has a cable franchise there as well, but I don't. You may know better than I.
Mr. Chair, Representative Edwards, I'm not sure I caught the question, but if the question is there cable throughout the state of Oregon? The answer is no.
The question, if I may, Mr. Chair, the question is, are there significant areas in the current Fios system, which I understand is just Verizon system right now, but that's where a lot of this energy is being spent around. Are there significant areas of their current footprint where there is not an alternative for Aunt Millie for her phone service?
Mr. Chair, Representative Edwards, even in Washington County, where we work, there are areas of rural Washington County where their Comcast doesn't go, where Verizon doesn't go, except for POTS, plain old television, or plain old telephone service. So the only cable option out there, video option, is satellite, but that doesn't help your phone needs or Aunt Millie's phone issues. And, you know, in any rural area in the state, and including some small cities and on the other side of the Cascades, there's no cable operator. And I might just add that, you know, the Charter Cable, which serves some of your areas, went bankrupt today, which is the only cable operator in those cities. I don't know how that's going to affect them, but that's an issue.
You know, though, on that right there,
are you finished, Representative?
Well, I guess I won't wrap up comments in response. I mean, I have the same concerns, but this is all speculation about the future. And we're talking about, I mean, there are, and I understand not in every area you don't always have good cell service, but in totality there are cell options, there are cable options, and there are copper wire options for phone service, if that's what we're talking about. And the fear, a lot of the fear seems to be centered around the migration of telephone service onto into a VoIP type of a system, where then they would no longer be regulated. And so my question has always been, are there alternatives? And I'm not hearing that as we speculate that's where this is going. That, I mean, I'm not getting a good sense that there's a big boogeyman danger there that if it pops up, we can't address next session.
Mr. Chair, Representative Edwards, Well, first, you need to understand if the wired option is cable, that is VoIP. That is what that is VoIP. So it may or may not be there. If it's not there, for most customers, cellular and the technology today probably works. It has its problems with E911 and that sort of thing. There are some safety risks in an emergency. It's frankly not there after a number of days. So there, but that's a minor thing. There are certain customers, and I'll use the example of my 87-year-old father, who can't hear my voice when I talk to him over the cellular phone because the quality isn't there, enough there. And for them, for a person with a hearing disability, for the technology that I've seen today, it doesn't work. It's just not amplified enough. You can't get the same quality of service for that. I shouldn't say it's not readily available. It may be there. We probably could not provide service to those individuals through our TDAP, our program that addresses that need. So that's there, but I think those are probably on the small end of things, and maybe there are people we just leave out in the cold. I mean, that's just sometimes that's just the result of public policy.
You know, I can't hear my cell phone either unless I'm in a quiet room. It's horrible. I hate it. I won't tell you who gave it to me.
Mr. Chair, you suffer from the same thing I am. We're getting old.
But on the but you're looking good, Grandpa. That's what matters. on the LeGrand versus Portland or whatever. You know, I love LeGrand. Matter of fact, I spent some time out there several years ago on a telecom issue. It had to do, I think, Senator Montes Anderson and Representative Butler and Senator Nelson and I were had to do with, I think, educational, healthcare-related educational opportunities over the internet. And there was a whole bunch of, and I spent some time out there and I went walking neighborhoods and I could live in that town. But you know what? They don't have a lot of things. They don't have this, and they don't have a Nordstrom's, and they don't have as many giant, beautiful theater productions, and a lot of things that I could live without, but two people in my household choose not to. So, you know, we could talk about how LeGrand doesn't have X, Y, and Z. LeGrand has a lot of things that were good for me. I could live out there without voice over internet protocol, and all those good, fine Americans out there have chosen to do that, too. So that argument, and I think eventually all this technology will get, there will be some money in it for somebody somewhere down the line, especially as it advances and it all goes to the satellite and back, not down some dirt buried cable. But, I don't know how much that really, that argument works for me. Okay, Representative Esquivel, please. No,
thank you, Mr. Chair. How long has been phone service been around, actually, Lee?
Turn of the century?
About 1900?
Yeah.
Okay. It was 8 years ago, I believe, 8 years ago approximately, that Granite, Oregon finally got telephone service.
Where?
Granite, Oregon.
Pauses.
8 years ago.
I think that's the one.
That's only 100 years.
Transmitter in there.
So it goes out according to the demand. It goes out according to economics. It goes out according to service.
Well, in that case, Mr. Chair, Representative Esquivel, those were subsidized.
Well, they wouldn't have it today.
You had stated that, Mr. Commissioner, you had stated that these people didn't contact you to work together on this issue. Did you contact them?
We have talked in the past, but not on putting the bill together yet. We didn't know the bill was being put together until we'd seen it.
And then the other thing is cities and municipalities are going to have something going on here in the future, and that's called satellite. You're going to be able to do anything on a satellite you can on a landline, period.
And they're going to have trouble.
That's going to be a trend of the future. So I have grave concerns about our municipalities in dealing with satellite. Right now, you don't need to have any cable TV anywhere in the state of Oregon. You do not have to have cable TV. You can hook up to a satellite anywhere in this state and get it. So, anyway, I just wanted to clarify that, see if you'd contacted them.
Okay, Representative Barton, and we're going to have to move on, folks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chairman Beyer, again, congratulations on being a grandfather this week. My question for you, I asked you the question last time, but I want to clarify for the record because it is critical to how I plan to vote today. the PUC in Oregon currently does not have authority to regulate VoIP. If you were to attempt to regulate VoIP in the future, you would have to come to this legislature for us to delegate authority to do so, which is presumably why you brought forward the Dash 11 amendments.
Mr. Chair, Representative Barton, that is my understanding. That is consistent with what we did, what the Commission has done in the past on dealing with cramming and slamming legislation. It's consistent with the discussion we had in the last session over cellular phones.
Mr. Chair, please. Follow-up comment. I'm planning on voting against the Dash 9 amendments today.
But we're not voting today, Representative.
But I'm doing so for, I think, a different reason than for those Representative Holby expressed. It's not so much, to the extent I'm planning to vote against the Dash 9 amendments, I would oppose the Dash 11 amendments with even greater force. It is not so much that I believe we need to regulate this market at this time, so much as I'm concerned about the risk of unintended consequences by acting at this time. We simply don't know. This area of law is unsettled with the FCC regulations. This technology is unsettled, and I would prefer to essentially punt and wait and see what happens. I think we'd make a more informed decision later. Also, I must say, I think I've taken some heat on this from all sides. I'm fairly convinced that this bill, Dash 9 amendments, is neither as good nor as bad as everyone suggests. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Well put, Representative. Okay, guys, I really appreciate you coming down today. And then I'm going to call Brenda Wilson and Andrea Poe. And then after those two nice people, Martha Bellegrino and Jim Austin after.
Chair, you had called me up before. But
oh, forgive me, Jeff. Go right ahead. Forgive me. Come on up, though. Andrea and Martha, or Brenda and Andrea, would you come on up? Go ahead, Jeff. Go ahead. Forgive me. I'm sorry.
Not at all, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jeff Bissonnette, representing the Citizens Utility Board of Oregon, and I'll be brief, but happy to answer any questions you have, which could extend my comments. I want to focus my comments precisely on the issue that the chairman raises and that Representative Edwards raises. For us, there is no question about the regulation of VoIP. There is no question about the consumer protections around that. Our issue goes well beyond VoIP. If this was only a VoIP bill, I wouldn't be here, and I think this room would be a lot emptier. Our concern is precisely the question that Representative Edwards asked, is what about that last line? What about Aunt Millie? And where the concern for us goes is, you know, Fios is the brand name for what is generically known as fiber to the premises. As the PUC chairman said, right now we have copper connecting with a digital system. We are starting to see more and more that copper link not carrying the phone service, but the fiber to the premises carrying that phone service. The only thing that is regulated today is that basic phone service when you pick up your phone and you get a dial tone and can make a call. And that is what we continue to want to be regulated. That is the basic service. We are not talking about any sort of auxiliary service. We are not talking about any sort of ancillary service. We are talking about that basic dial tone service that Aunt Millie and people that don't want a cell phone, that don't want any of the bells and whistles, that don't want cable, but want that basic dial tone service. And what our main concern about 2405 in the original bill and even the Dash 9s is that we could lose the ability to regulate that basic phone service. And I did talk to Verizon, and I said, look, here's our concern. And they said, well, see what you can come up with. We'd be happy to take a look at it. And I have to say, over a 4 or 5 day period, I started to sort of try and draft something that addressed our concern. At the last hearing, we were admonished by a representative that we shouldn't think too hard about this bill. My problem with the bill is that Verizon gave us too much to think about. If it was only a VoIP bill, we wouldn't have to think that hard about it. But what I was trying to anticipate is any other internet-enabled protocol or successor technology, and that covers a lot. And so, for Representative Barton, I understand your concerns around the Dash 11s. The advantage around the Dash 11s is that it precisely defines voice over internet protocol service. And so if Aunt Millie is not going to use a technology that enables real-time two-way voice communications that originates from or terminates at a user's location or requires equipment at the user's location that is compatible with internet protocol or permits a user to receive calls from the public switch. I mean, this is a very precise definition of VoIP. And so that is what we are trying to do. If this was a VoIP-only bill, got no problem from us. What we're trying to preserve is the regulated basic telephone service and making sure that Aunt Millie or Uncle Charlie or whomever that only wants that dial tone to the phone that is today regulated and we believe still needs to be regulated stays regulated. And our concern is that when you start talking beyond VoIP, and we are going to see the internet-enabled protocol connecting to the house, and at that point, that is our fear is that is where we lose that handle of regulation over that very basic dial tone service. And if we could figure out a way to address that, we would be much happier. Until we figure out a way to address that, we will be in opposition to the bill.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Good morning, Chair Schaffler and Vice Chairs Barton and Cameron. For the record, my name is Brenda Wilson. I'm with the City of Eugene. I'm their Governmental Relations Manager. And I'm here still in opposition of House Bill 2405. And I'll keep my comments very brief and try to explain what our main difference is. And first off, I would like to say thank you to Verizon for all of their work in trying to address some of our issues. And I believe that some of our issues have been addressed. However, I would disagree with all due respect to Mr. Ng that our differences are philosophical. They are, in fact, concrete, and currently they are litigious. I have two main issues with the Dash 9s, and the first is with the new section that would be the very last provision, which is H now. We think that is unnecessary and counterproductive and would lead to an additional claim under state law that somehow an action that we take it is preempted by federal law and we now have to go into court and defend that. And I hate to seem so paranoid, but as you know, the City of Eugene has already fought four cases against our current ordinance to tax, have won all four of those cases, and we are currently involved in two other cases in which we are again arguing over our tax, which leads me to the subsection 2 in the bill that begins on line 15, I guess, which, although the amendments, the Dash 9 amendments, do attempt to address and protect our right to charge use of right-of-way fees and taxes, the issue that we still have, and we appreciate they took out the word regulate, that basically what this section says is a political subdivision, which would be the City of Eugene, cannot take an action which would have the force or effect of a law that regulates or has the effect of regulating C, the entry into market. Well, as I stated in my previous testimony, in October of 2006, Verizon stopped paying us our 2% tax. Their argument is not against our tax. Their argument is that in enforcing that tax, it has the force or effect of a law that regulates or has the effect of regulating the entry into market. And so House Bill 2405, although it attempts to protect our right to charge that 2% tax, this provision that still exists in this bill is being used right now to not pay the tax to the City of Eugene. And that is our main concern with 2405, and I have to say that we are still in opposition.
Thank you. You know, Jeff, slamming and cramming, that was in 2003, I believe, wasn't it? Or was that 2000?
Mr. Chair, that sounds about right.
Yeah, because I was a freshman on that committee. And, that was a problem. And I agreed with you, and I voted to stop that practice, and that was the right thing to do. And we protected the consumers.
Mm-hmm.
But how many decades had telephone technology been in this state before this legislature actually acted on it? Because it did not become a great giant problem until some people invented this ridiculous way to get squeeze money out of the consumers. So for decades, we went right along, and people just got their dial tone, my parents, and nobody called them, bugged them about slamming and cramming, because all this stuff didn't exist. Once it existed, and once a problem was created by people that were greedy and stupid, we put the hammer down on them, rightfully so. And the whole the same logic, in my opinion, applies here. Let's get it going. As things come up and go wrong, come in here and put the hammer down on them. Now, I'm not going to address your taxes. That's in court. But I just can't help saying that, because when I was a kid, a little kid, we didn't have anybody slamming and cramming because it didn't exist. Once it existed, we dealt with it. And I'm confident that this body and future legislatures and governors will be able to deal with anybody who's stupid and greedy enough to come into the state and rip off our consumers. I'm confident. I'm convinced of it. And that's just a comment. If you want to respond, you can. We got to get going. And I'm going to open up for questions, but if you want to say something, I'll looking around for questions.
Yeah.
Okay, Representative Whip, then Edwards.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Jeff, we've heard from the PUC that they've had discussions with consumer problems. I didn't think at the time to ask them whether some of those problems have been with Verizon. Are you aware, Citizens Utility Board, of problems that customers have with Verizon?
Mr. Chair, I think it would be the fair statement to say that we deal with calls as they come in from our membership, from people who are, find us on the web or whatnot, and I think it would be fair to say that there is not a telephone company, regulated or unregulated, that we have not heard about. Directly back to your comment, Mr. Chair, I appreciate your efforts on the slamming and cramming issues, but it's a different issue. What we're talking about is the basic regulated service that provides the dial tone in the first place, and that is today a regulated service. It is a rate-regulated service. The company has no option. They can't charge what the market bears. They are committed to filing rate requests and having that service regulated, not anything else, that service. And that is an important sort of consumer protection in and of itself, and that is the only thing that we are looking to make sure that stays regulated. Our concern is that if you have a fiber to the premises, all it takes is the flip of a button and a person can pick up their phone and have the dial tone and not realize that they are not on on the regulated service anymore. And so that's the only thing we're trying to protect. And so without that protection, without that basic dial tone, slamming, cramming doesn't come into play. Voice, caller ID, call waiting, call forwarding, all that stuff doesn't come into effect. All we are talking about is that basic dial tone service, without which you don't have any of the other good things or problems.
Thank you. Any more? Oh, Representative Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Brenda, for coming and sharing the concerns of the City of Eugene, and I appreciate your being available to talk with me about this yesterday evening, and your work in sending me information from the City of Eugene. I read all of that last night. I went line by line again after talking with you to make sure that I understood the concerns, and I guess I wanted to speak to both points that you've mentioned. The first was in the -9 amendments, the second page, H, that part that essentially is a redundancy, which I'm not really clear why we need the redundancy in this bill, but it's a redundancy that says it's a violation of state law to violate federal law. Okay, so I understand what you're asserting. Your concerns would be that this would give another cause of action, I guess, for telecommunications companies that are affected by this to sue the City of of Eugene, or excuse me, to not pay the tax that the city of Eugene currently levies above the 7%. And so I called just an attorney friend of mine yesterday evening, and I said, you know, in your opinion, is this a new cause of action? And he didn't really think that it was probably a new cause of action. Maybe there's an opportunity to take it to a different venue, but actually he wasn't even really sure that exists either. So I, you know, it seems like there's a lack of clarity, and I understand your concerns, but I wanted to speak to your concern. And then the other one being that in section 2 of the bill, the last line, you know, in section 2, that local governments essentially would not be able to pass rules, regulations, standards, or any other provision having the force or effect of law that regulates or has the effect of regulating subsection C, the entry into the market of VoIP or Internet Protocol Enabled Service. I understand that concern, and I understand that that's what's being litigated right now over the tax issue. I think, frankly, I hope that Verizon is unsuccessful in their argument. I think that they will be unsuccessful in their argument, but this body doesn't adjudicate the law, and that is going to be up to a court to determine, when they hear both sides, does this tax constitute a barrier of entry into the market? And just as a general principle, I agree with what the bill says. Local governments should not be able to enact rules or regulations that have the effect of creating a barrier to entry into the market. So I don't agree that tax is a barrier to entry, and I think that they will be unsuccessful. I hope that they are unsuccessful. I hope that you guys are unsuccessful in your attempts to argue that that's a barrier to entry. But as a general concept, I'm supportive of this language right here. And so I understand your concerns, but I respectfully disagree, and that this is quite the problem. And I kind of echo what Representative Barton said earlier. I'm not sure that any of this is quite as bad as anybody, or as good as anybody on either side thinks that it is.
Chair Schaffler, Representative Edwards, I appreciate your comments and taking the time to read the material that I sent to you. We agree, you know, Section H is gratuitous and counterproductive, and it's not really necessary. I mean, we otherwise all the bills that come out of this legislature ought to say, well, make sure you don't preempt federal law. I mean, that's, you know, we don't do that. And so it's counterproductive, and it would just make us feel a little bit better if it was taken out. As to the other, I don't want to comment on the litigation that's going on right now. I just wanted to state that that's why we stopped receiving payment in October of 2006, and it is a concern for us. The Dash 11 amendments completely take out political subdivision and do not apply to us at all, and that's why that they are more favorable to us than the Dash 9s at this particular point.
Thank you, and I really appreciate you coming. We're going to have to move on, though. Thank you very much. Okay, Andrea Fogg, Nancy Werner, and Martha Bellagrino. Martha, I hope I'm pronouncing your last name.
It's Martha. Right,
I hope I'm pronouncing your last name right. If I'm not, please correct me. If you want to go ahead and start, go ahead.
Thank you.
And then before you, I intend to finish this up, and then there's someone from Pendleton who wants to testify to House Bill 2963. I'm going to let that person up first because I want them to get home. And we're not working either one of these bills today, the other two bills anyway, so I just wanted to announce that in case anybody. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Andrea Fogg with the League of Oregon Cities. This morning I have with me, again, Nancy Werner with the law firm of Beery, Elsner & Hammond. We will make our comments brief. The Dash 9 amendments do not address the league's concerns regarding franchising and rights-of-way authority. In addition, we think that House Bill 2405 still leaves cities open to very costly litigation. The Dash 11 amendments, however, they go a lot further toward addressing our concerns with the franchising and rights of way. They narrow the bill to voice over internet protocol, and they also include consumer protections. And with that, I'd like Nancy to address some of those specific concerns with the Dash 9 amendments.
Good morning, Chair Schaffler, members of the committee. Again, I'm Nancy Warner with Beery, Elsner, and Hammond. I appreciate the opportunity to testify again regarding this bill. As Andrea said, this bill does not address local government concerns. It does not protect the roadway adequately, and it does not protect fees and privilege taxes. I have three main points. I'll get to them and get through them as quickly as I can. The first is the fees and taxes. It was asserted earlier that this bill would have no impact on local fees and taxes, and that is just not correct on the face of the bill. If you look at 3C of the amendment, the Dash 9 amendments, it protects only taxing authority over VOIP, and as many people have stressed, this bill also includes IP-enabled services. So this bill would not permit any taxes on IP-enabled services, even if those services use the right-of-way. There is, and my second point is, there is a right-of-way authority safe harbor, if you will, that I'll agree on its face appears to protect franchises. And, you know, in a world where there were no lawyers, and I can say this because I'm a lawyer, that might be the case, but that's not the world we live in. The world we live in is a world where we have already litigated this issue. The Telecommunications Act of 1996 prevents barriers to entry into the telecommunications market and has a safe harbor for right-of-way management and compensation for use of the right-of-way. That led to years and years of litigation over whether or not you could have a franchise as part of your right-of-way management authority, whether or not your right-of-way management ordinance could include things like requiring maps of the location of the facilities, permits, permit fees, all of those things. So unfortunately, this language that purports to preserve right-of-way authority would not necessarily protect franchises, and I think would lead to additional litigation similar to the 1996 Act litigation over whether or not cities can continue to have franchises over these services. Similarly, with event, again, back to fees, the Telecom Act purported to protect compensation for use of the right-of-way, and that was also litigated. The question there was whether or not cities could, or one of the questions was whether or not cities could have gross revenues-based fees, which most cities have. And the argument against the telecommunications companies was that was not permitted under the Act despite a clear reference to allowing compensation. Similarly, under this bill, the Dash 9 amendments purport to protect fees, but it opens the door to the same litigation about whether or not the gross revenue-based fee that cities have used, which is rent for use of the right-of-way, would be permitted as a fee under this bill. So I have serious concerns about local authority being protected, and I've if I were a betting woman, I would say we're going to end up in litigation over this language. My third point quickly is back to the cable provision, and the Dash 9 amendments in 3D are designed to protect local authority for cable franchises. And I think Representative Kenmer asked the correct question to Verizon, which is, what happens if an IP video service is not a cable service under federal law? And the answer is, under this bill, it would not be protected. As I already said, the fees and tax provision does not allow for taxes on IP-enabled service. And an IPTV service would be an IP-enabled service. Taxes would not be permitted under this bill. So it would clearly impact local local taxes on cable when this video moves to IP. As Andrea said, the Dash 11 amendments, while not perfect, address these issues by clearly protecting local authority and keeping local government out of the issue. I'd like to address the idea that was raised before, which is, if there's an issue, we'll fix it. Let's let them come in and make their investment. If there's an issue, we'll fix it. I would like to submit, in terms of the local right-of-way regulation, local government isn't regulating entry into the market. We preserve and protect the right-of-way and receive fair compensation for that. And I would submit that there's no point in preempting regulations that protect the right-of-way in an effort to preserve and, you know, protect the entry into the market when this local government's doing nothing to be a barrier to the entry into the market. If local government isn't a barrier to entry, then Verizon or other companies can come back and ask for some protection there. But I don't think we have an issue with barrier to entry at this point. And that concludes my comments. I'm happy to take any questions. Thank you.
Martha, go ahead. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Martha Pellegrino, representing the City of Portland. I will keep my comments brief, as requested by the Chair. I have distributed a letter from the Mount Hood Cable Regulatory Commission that addresses the -9 amendments. And the Chair of that commission, Mr. Norm Thomas, who is also a City Councilor with Troutdale, carefully review the amendments and recognize the problems that Mr. Chris and Ms. Werner have just raised. So I just want to make sure that's officially on the record. I'm also standing in today for David Olson, who's the director of Portland's Office of Cable and Franchise Management, and he regrets he isn't able to be here. He's at home with the flu. But he also has communicated very clearly that this bill, that the law of unintended consequences clearly applies in this case. And we have, as has been mentioned before, City of Portland has been involved in litigation that has gone up and down the state and federal judicial system over the authority to manage the rights of way. And I guess I would say that the city still has strong concerns about the -9 amendments. The comments that Chairman Beyer put on the record with regard to consumer protection, we see the -11s as a preferable alternative. And with that, Mr. Chair, I'll wrap up.
Thank you. Any questions of these good folks? All right. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Jim Austin. Please, Jim. Thanks for being so patient. And then after Jim, I'm going to finish up with John DiLorenzo and Mike Dewey. Good morning. I hadn't forgotten.
Thank you. I appreciate that. For the record, Jim Austin, representing Clackamas County, and I'm happy that I have three Clackamas County legislators up here on this panel, and hopefully they would be sympathetic to our concerns with House Bill 2405.
Always sympathetic to all concerns of the good county of Clackamas.
Thank you, and I appreciate the fact that you're always willing to listen.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
This bill has been promoted as a bill with a voice over internet protocol, but clearly there's more to it than that. I've given you some copies of my written testimony, so I won't read those verbatim. But clearly, with the discussions we've had here, there is much more that's involved. There's the potential for litigation, as demonstrated by litigation that's happening in other jurisdictions around the states about this. What is cable? When is it not cable? And I would submit to you that, you know, the definition of internet protocol enabled service in the bill, and then the definition of voice over internet protocol, if this is just about internet, I mean, you could get rid of the VoIP language, and it would still be covered under internet protocol enabled service. But it's the inclusion of the internet protocol enabled service, and I feel like I'm repeating what a lot of other people have already stated, that is causing most of the problem here. The proponents of the bill have said this is just about, you know, implementing voice over internet protocol, but it's clearly much more than that. And I don't understand why the insistence of including that in the bill. It would seem to me that we could get rid of a lot of the opposition to this by just limiting to VoIP. We wouldn't have any concerns. We're very concerned about this right now because Clackamas County has an award-winning, multiple award-winning government cable channel. Bill, Representative Kennemer knows the chair. Chocolate, Representative Kennedy knows about that, and we're all very proud of it. We also use some of the funds we get from the franchise agreements to support North Clackamas County School District's their educational channel that runs out of their Sabin Schellenberg Center. We have intergovernmental agreements to share funds with Clackamas Community College for their educational channel. And it allows them to do course content over a cable channel. We share funds with Willamette Falls Television for their public access cable service. So there's a lot riding on this. There's a lot riding on this. It's already been demonstrated that this is already being litigated all over the place. And this isn't really, this Internet protocol-enabled service isn't like the future of telecommunications. It's in the very near future. And in some jurisdictions, in some areas, it's actually being delivered as such. I don't know. I'm just very disturbed that it's here. There's a lot riding on this. There's a lot at stake. I'm not comfortable with the idea that sometime in the very near future we may have to go to court to litigate to get back the rights that we already have, which is to negotiate franchise fees and fulfill a consumer protection role. If the VoIP language or the EPES language was out and it was limited to just VoIP, as is in the Dash 11s, I'd be very supportive. And that's all. I thank you for your consideration. I know this is you're getting a lot of pressure from a lot of people on this, but
thank you. I am going to carry over House Bill 3122 to a date to be determined, just so people know out there we're running out of time. Any questions of Mr. Austin?
I have a real
question.
Thank you, Chair Schaffler. My question is, we're hearing a lot of problems with the bill, but do you as an organization or does the county see any benefit to what Verizon's investing in and what that could do for economic development? Would it be something that would attract more business, having that broadband service? Is there a benefit to that?
Yes, certainly. I mean, the answer would be yes, particularly if it's brought out to other areas that are underserved right now. But if it's if it's involving our concern is the inclusion of video in internet protocol enabled service, which brings up the whole question of when is you watching reruns of Matlock on Turner Broadcasting Network, not cable, when it's coming over an internet, when it's provided via an internet provider enabled service. And that appears to be the issue for us. But I agree. I mean, expanding these kind of networks does have beneficial impact.
And just a follow-up comment, and I guess the point I'm making is that we're hearing a lot from a lot of problems with the bill, but ultimately, the bill's an investment towards Oregon, and I see it as potential benefit and, a contributing factor for economic development, jobs and whatnot. But I also say that if there's benefit to the bill, what I'd like to see is people kind of collaborating, working, submitting language that they can work with. I think Representative Holvey has an amendment he'll be talking about too. But rather than focus on everything wrong with this, let's also look at what this could do if we work together to get something right for the community. So that's my take on it. That's my comment, and we'll move on. Thank you.
If I may follow up, Chair Schaffler and Representative Matthews, and I don't think that, I believe that our concerns could be addressed without impeding the progress of putting in this infrastructure.
Any further questions of Representative? Oh, forgive me, Mr. Representative.
Yeah, just real quick. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Austin, if I have or somebody has DirecTV or the other whatever dish network in Clackamas County, do they get to watch the good chair and the representative on your programs that you deliver?
On our government channel. Our government channel, we have, I think, 24/7 original content. We show commission hearings, planning board meetings, and then, like, for instance, Willamette Falls educational.
Shorten the answer.
Okay.
If I have DirecTV or Dish Network, TV in your service area, that do I get to watch those programs that you deliver?
That I do not know.
Okay. Thank you.
No.
Okay.
It's not on there?
It's not on cable TV. No. It's only on
it's on cable.
It's on cable. It's not on. It's not on satellite TV.
Thank you.
Local cable access is not provided to that service.
Thank you, Representative.
Thank you for that question. Yeah. Any further questions of Mr. Austin before I let him go? Thank you, Jim. Okay, I'm going to finish up with John DiLorenzo and Mike Dewey and their professionals, and I'm going to ask them to be concise, brief, and to the point, because we're moving on.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is John DiLorenzo. I'm a partner at Davis Wright Tremaine. I'm here on behalf of Integra Telecom, TW Telecom, XO Communications, Paytech, and McLeod USA Telecommunications. We engaged in extensive negotiations with Verizon Com, the proponents of the bill, and can now report that the Dash 9s satisfy our concerns. We have moved from opposed to neutral.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, representing the Oregon Cable Telecommunications Association, the Oregon Cable Companies are the largest provider of broadband services in Oregon. And I had not intended to testify. I'll be very brief. There was a comment, and I believe it's factual, regarding Charter Communications, which is the second largest cable company in Oregon. And it was with regard to bankruptcy. And I had understood that that filing would take place yesterday. I understand perhaps it was today. That is necessarily a good thing for Charter and their customers. I don't know the nuances of the agreement, the bankruptcy agreement with the creditors, but they're going to be able to shed, I believe, about $8 billion in debt. The services will continue, and I didn't want to leave the impression here with regard to bankruptcy that Charter would somehow be going out of business, because that is not the case. Paul Allen is a significant investor in Charter, and at the end of the day, when they come out of bankruptcy, I think they will be a much healthier company. So I want to put that on the record, because there might have been a perception about what would occur in the future. So, Mr. Chair, I'm happy to answer any questions, but I just wanted to put that on the record.
Thanks, Mike. Any questions of these gentlemen? Right, I am.
Yeah, did Paul Allen file bankruptcy today?
The Blazers won last night.
No.
All right, thanks, guys. I appreciate it. And once again, 3122 is being carried over to a date to be determined. Oh, and we're also carrying over House Bill 2405. So we have a meeting room for everybody. Have a nice weekend. I'm going to close the hearing on House Bill 2405. 3122 is being carried over. I'm going to open a hearing on House Bill 2963.
Mr. Chair, committee members, House Bill 2963 prohibits assistant attorneys general and deputy district attorneys from striking. You have in front of you a dash one amendment that removes the assistant attorney general from the measure.
Thank you. Representative, please. And the good representative's done, Joe Basler, Stacey Chamberlain, and Dan Wendell, please. Go ahead, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Greg Matthews, for the record, State Representative, House District 50. Bring this bill to you today. I'll be brief, but we're going to pass on to the experts. We've had some folks travel a long ways. I appreciate you holding in there and hearing this bill. This bill, simply put, the dash one, we agree with. We had initially drawn this up and, have... had kind of an oversight that went through LC. We came back and we submitted the dash one. So, simply put, this applies to our deputy district attorneys, and we'll prohibit them from striking, as it says. In terms of public employee collective bargaining, this would put them into a binding arbitration where, of course, as somebody who's the chief negotiator for firefighters, we're in the same class. We're trying to move them into that class. In my opinion, this is about service to the community and extending that service while you're in contract negotiations. I am somebody that firmly believes that you can get a lot accomplished through through the mediation process and through collective bargaining. And I think during that process, I think it's important you continue to supply the service to the community. And deputy district attorneys, I think, provide a very important service, and I think we'd be best served if we were able to put them in the class along with police officers, firefighters, and of course our great transit workers and some of the others that have joined the ranks of that. So this is an effort that would do that and put them into the binding arbitration and non-striking clause.
Thank you, Representative. And then when we give them some regulatory business to do when voice internet protocol goes down in the handbasket, we want to make damn sure they can't go on strike in the middle of those litigious times.
We'll put it in the chair.
And I appreciate you bringing this bill, Representative, in all due
seriousness. Does that mean you're going to support the Dash 11s?
Any questions of our good friend, Representative?
Real quick, Representative. Sure.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Matthews. Are the deputy district attorneys organized today?
Mr. Chair and Representative Cameron, yes, they are, with AFSCME. And you'll be hearing from Joe Basler right now.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, sir.
Any questions of our good friend here? All right, thanks, Representative.
Thank you.
Joe, Stacy, and Dan, come on up.
Chair Schaffler, members of the committee, I'm going to let our resident district attorney go first and sort of give you an idea of the work he does and give you a better sense of the bill.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Dan Wendell. I'm the Chief Deputy District Attorney for Umatilla County in the state of Oregon. I'm here today to testify in favor of the bill that's before the committee, House Bill 2963. And I offer a perspective to the committee that this is not, in fact, a union bill. This is a public safety bill. And in order to explain that, I'd like to talk a little bit about my office. My county has got between 70 and 80,000 people in it. My boss, the district attorney, is elected by those people. He's a state employee. He's paid by the state, and he's answerable to the voters and to the governor. And aside from a small supplement that he's paid by the county, it's all from the state. He's appointed 8 deputies. I'm the chief of the deputies, and there's 7 others that are charged with upholding the Constitution of the United States and the constitutional laws of the great state of Oregon. And we represent the state in all criminal actions at a state level in our county. And beyond what you see in Law and Order and shows like that, where we stand up and we articulate our case in front of a judge or a jury, where we call witnesses and examine them, our role is much more vital than that. Police officers, every single police officer, Oregon State Police Trooper and Deputy Sheriff in the county has my personal cell phone number and my landline. I'm one of those people that still has those copper wires going to my house. And if they don't have my phone number, they can reach me through their dispatch. I'm subject to being called out any time of the day or night for any reason that law enforcement needs me. I've been present for services of search warrants. I've had to review search warrants in the middle of the night. My job is to be able to interface between the police and the courts to obtain a judge to sign those warrants, to answer questions of the police about what they're doing, what they need to do, what they need to do to stay within the law, and what they need to do to help us build a case so that we can put people in prison when they need to be put in prison. We deal with all sorts of crimes in our county, and no matter how many thousands of police officers could be put on, additional police officers could be put on the street, no matter how many additional prisons could be built to house people that have been convicted of crimes, no matter how much more funding could go to community corrections, probation officers, treatment providers, things like that to rehabilitate offenders, without prosecutors, none of that happens. In this state, when someone is arrested and brought into jail, they have a right to appear before a judge within 36 hours, excluding holidays and weekends, to face their charges. And if there are no prosecutors present to file those charges, those people are released out back into the community where they can commit further crimes. All of this together goes to say that we need to be at work. We're like police officers. We're like firefighters. If we aren't there, the courts don't run well. The prisons don't get filled. The treatment providers are not given clients to deal with. And there's an Oregon State Bar opinion that says, yes, government lawyers can strike. It's a 2005 opinion, and with all due respect to the State Bar, that opinion is essentially worthless. It says government lawyers can strike, but they still have to maintain and abide by the Oregon State Bar ethical rules. And all of us that took office have sworn an oath to uphold the Constitution and the laws. And that does not allow us the luxury of being able to strike. I'm not going to look an 8-year-old in the face who's been raped and anally sodomized by her father and has been waiting for trial for years and say, I'm sorry, I'm not taking your case. It's going to have to get continued because we're going on strike. I'm not going to do that. My fellow deputies are not going to do that. At the same time, we need to be able to attract and retain talented, dedicated people to do this job. I looked at the 2008 Oregon District Attorneys Association salary survey that looks at deputy DAs, DAs, and county council all over the state, and it bottomed out at about $36,000 for an entry-level position. That's $36,000 for someone that's had to go through 4 years of college, 3 years of law school, and may have well into 6 figures of debt, student loan debt to take care of. And we need to be able to attract and retain talented people. We need to be able to negotiate with our counties in order to maintain, to get salaries, good salaries, to get good benefits and things of that nature. But essentially what it comes down to is prosecutors are unique in the world of lawyers. My client is the state. I don't have a discrete specific client with a discrete specific legal matter that very well could be left alone for a couple of weeks while we work through some negotiations, because these things take time moving through the court system, and there's always times when things aren't happening on a case. Every single day, our office has a meeting at 7:45 in the morning, and every single day we review what are called probable cause statements. These are statements that an officer swears to in order to arrest somebody and lodge them in our jail. And we review those statements, and we determine if we need to charge people. We need to determine if we need to charge them with crimes, if we have to contact the law enforcement officers to talk about what other evidence they need to seek out, what other investigation they need to do. This happens every single business day. And if we aren't there to do that, nobody's there to do that. The opinion speaks of allowing an employer a specific period, enough time to obtain replacement counsel. My former boss, who is now a circuit court judge, had a joke that he used to like to say when we were interviewing people. We have a two-step training process. Step one, here's the file. Step two, there's the court. Now, that's a little bit glib, but that's really how a lot of this this training process works. But that only works if you have your senior people around to field questions, to help, to sit in on court, to answer questions, to give direction to the new people. If we have a strike, we have 8 new deputies come in, that's just not going to happen. There's not going to be anybody there that's familiar with the local system. And a place where it's been floated that a lot of where these resources could come from if there was a strike could be the Attorney General's office. But regardless of the numbers of attorneys that work in the Attorney General's office, only about 12 of them are in criminal justice. They could maybe cover for our county, but they certainly couldn't cover for Multnomah County or Clackamas County or Washington County or any of the larger counties. And as talented and as professional as those folks are, they're not familiar with our local systems. They're not familiar with our local judges, our local police chiefs, our local sheriffs, our local regional command, Oregon State Police structure. They're not familiar with any of that. And you can't expect people to come into a case that's been winding through the system for months or years and be able to take over that case. And so, ladies and gentlemen, I wholeheartedly support this bill. And it's worth noting that I didn't come to this bill, I didn't come to this profession with any kind of a pro-union stance. I didn't really care about unions, and to the extent that I did, I was probably against them. But having seen the good that unions can do, I have become a supporter of that, and I believe wholeheartedly that this is necessary in order to allow us to do our jobs and to protect the good people of this great state.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Ms. Chamberlain.
Chair Schaffler, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Stacey Chamberlain, and I'm a council representative for Oregon AFSCME. As part of my assignment for AFSCME, I represent the Clatsop County Deputy DAs. Last year, we were in contract negotiations with the county, and my members were extremely frustrated by the process. And that was due to the fact that they saw the county having all the power at the table. And they had all the power because the members do not have the ability to strike without violating their ethics rules. When a group of workers cannot strike and they don't have the ability to go to interest arbitration, there is no balance of power at the table. The county is very well aware that the DAs can't strike because of their ethical rules, and typically when we make any proposals, they're rejected outright. In addition, you won't see a lot of articles in the Clatsop Deputy DA's contract that you'd see in other public employee contracts. For example, they don't have an article on grievance handling. It's a very common article to have in collective bargaining agreements. It's not there. And it's not there because the county rejected the union's proposals to put it there. In addition, their benefits article, typically in a contract you see the benefits outlined specifically. In the DA's contract, you don't see that. What you'll see is that the deputy DAs in Clatsop County will get the same benefits package that the non-represented employees get. We tried changing that as well, and the county rejected that outright. Suffice it to say, there have been very little changes to this collective bargaining agreement over the years. And in fact, besides changes to the wage scale, there have been no changes since 1997 of any significance. The DAs in Clatsop County are also frustrated because they're not treated like other public safety employees. And like the WDA said, they are an integral part of law enforcement. So I'm here just to support this legislation. It's very important to the members in Clatsop County, and thank you.
Joe, you got any more to say?
Nope.
Just here to maybe better identify yourself.
My name is Joe Basley. Okay. I work for Oregon AFSCME, and just here to clean up in case anyone has any questions.
Well, thanks. And Mr. Wendell, I really appreciate all your efforts, and I appreciate coming down here for God's country, and hope you have a good, safe trip back. Clearly, the name's on the bill. You have a lot of sympathy here in this committee, and I look forward to passing the bill out as amended. And it's good to see that another generation of Chamberlains here fighting on the behalf of workers and their families, and God bless you. Anyway, so any questions of these good people? Representative Thatcher.
I'm just trying to imagine who's opposed. Anybody say, hey, why do you want to forbid yourselves from striking?
No one's come up to us about opposition, and it's been on, I know the WDA's association has not taken a position that I know of, and we haven't heard from the counties either, so not sure.
I'll go to your second, Representative. You know, you're ethically bound not to quit your job because of a strike, and if you can't go to some kind of arbitration, you clearly have no voice whatsoever at a bargaining table. I think that's the gist of what we're doing here. Am I correct? Yeah, great. Representative Matthews.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And in response to Representative Thatcher's question, I haven't had anybody come right out to me and ask either. I did mean to address Representative Cameron's question before he asked it, because that is the number one question people aren't aware of, is are these folks members of unions now? And so obviously that is yes, but it's a class that people just don't. They don't associate with a labor group. But I can say, as a former police officer of 11 years, I can't imagine not having a deputy district attorney available, by phone or by, by office visit. I just can't imagine having them on strike, and I understand the ethical deal. So I'm very proud to carry this bill forward for you and have it before the committee. So thanks for coming all the way from Pendleton, and thanks again, Joe, for coming forward. And great to see you. Thank you.
Any further questions of these good people? So we don't have all the stuff, we need to pass it, and then we will next week. So I'm done.
Thank you very much.
Anyone else want to testify in this building? Seeing nobody, I'm going to close the hearing of House Bill 2963. And anything for the good of the order? Okay, and thank you for your patience today. It was a long hearing, I know, and I appreciate everybody's time. Close.